Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. John Gersma is our guest. John has been with us before, and we're happy to have him back. John is a wonderful person involved in a variety of things. He's the Chief Insights Officer at Young & Rubicam, also President of Brand Assets Consulting. We'll get into that and more, including his new book called Spend Shift. Spend Shift is the name of it. We'll find out more about that. We've got Jeremy Kent as well coming up in a little later on in the show with Ray and Brad here at the Advertising Show, which is also getting a little of assistance from one of our newer sponsors here at the Advertising Show. And Brad's going to talk about that here too as well.
Yeah, it's a wonderful company called Audible.com. And the big question, I guess, for all of our listeners, Ray, is are you listening on your iPod or MP3 player to the Advertising Show? Chances are you probably are. And you listen regularly through your iPod or MP3 player. Well, how would you like to have a free audiobook download along with a free 14-day trial from Audible.com? Well, it's pretty simple. All you have to do, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow, and they're going to give you an opportunity to sample over 75,000 titles of books and various bestsellers, arts and entertainment, fiction, nonfiction. It's all there. It's like a bookstore, but it's audio. And it's available simply by logging on to audiblepodcast.com/adshow. Sign up, free 14-day trial, free audio book download. How can you beat that? This is where free actually means free. So go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow and tell a friend about the free 14-day trial as well.
Now, I'm getting a visual of Billy Mays on that cell, and I think you did a good job at that.
Well, I just dyed my beard. I dyed my beard black, so that may have had something to do with it.
Anyway, that's a great organization, and we're happy to be partnered up with them here at the Advertising Show. Conan O'Brien, now this is, you know, we're a couple weeks out now, and with Conan's debut, did you happen to see, and I realize I'm going back here, but did you happen to see the debut show of Conan when he came back, the 8th? I think it was
the 8th, yeah. Right? Couple weeks ago almost. Yeah, I have it. I'm embarrassed to say I have it on my DVR and haven't gotten a chance to see it yet, but I did see a show a few days after that, so I've got a little sense of what he's doing now.
I thought it was really cool the way they did the intro. They had huge ratings. They beat it was Conan, then it was Leno, then it was Letterman on that particular night, only because you would expect that people are very interested in seeing what's going on with Conan and such. And he did a great series of promos. Unfortunately, I don't watch TBS a lot. Maybe I should. I don't know. But you see them on YouTube and such, but I didn't see them on the other places that you might think you would see them. I was, you know, you would think that TBS might buy some other opportunities for cable networks or satellite you know, networks and such. But I didn't see that. But they did a really great job of promoting him on TBS. So maybe that was a missed opportunity there. I don't know. But
that's a curiosity factor, you know, that's working for him. And, you know, that's going to happen for a while. Everybody, every new opportunity like that enjoys great ratings for the first few weeks. The bigger question will be 6 months to a year from now, right, Ray?
Very much so. Even in the way we live today, it's more like, what did you get last night? And how are you going to sustain that or whatever? So, you know, we had talked about, Brad, Wendy's. Ever since Dave Thomas passed away, Wendy's, it seems to me, has been in incredible turmoil in terms of who is going to represent Wendy's or take Dave's place. And usually what happens is, well, nobody can take Dave's place. And I think we've seen that proven over and over again with some of the concepts that have been coming up for for Wendy's. They've also changed their menu. They're not owned by the same company, yada, yada. But this is somebody that I met back in the mid-70s in Canton, Ohio. And her
Dave
name...
Dave or his daughter?
Wendy. I met Wendy. Yeah. And I was like, hi, I'm Wendy. It's like, this is pretty cool. Of course, nobody knew how cool it would be. But yeah, so they're bringing Wendy back in the television spots here. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think of that? I don't know that most people even know that Wendy's a real person and daughter of the founder and all that. I think they should go back to Where's the Beef. That seems to be the standout for the last 25 years.
It certainly was a great campaign for them as well.
And where's Dave, maybe?
Where's Dave? Maybe Wendy could talk to Dave or something. You know what I mean? She's 49. She's a co-owner with the family members. She has 30 franchises and is featured in the three TV spots running in Las Vegas that promote a new item being tested there. It's Dave's Hot and Juicy Cheeseburger.
What do you think of that, Ray? I mean, usually when your agency's in trouble, you know, put the client on TV to save the account. I'm not so sure Wendy and having her as a spokesperson is such a wise idea.
I tend to agree with you. Linda Kaplan Thaler is the agency of Wendy's.
They also show a few times.
Yeah, and they're pumping $75 million into the ad budget. And by the way, Wendy's is now part of Arby's. Okay, which blows my mind. You go to Taco
now we're
Bell.
Back to Where's the Beef?
Exactly. Something like that. They merged with Arby's, a $2 billion deal in late 2008. They've been introducing new menu offerings. Frankly, I like the fact that you could get a single, a double, or a triple. The burger was square, and I knew it was all good. And I really enjoyed that about Wendy's way back when. So I don't know. Maybe my concept there is just a little bit too much simplicity. So we'll see what happens in Vegas with Wendy Thomas hawking the campaign for that. That particular thing. We're going to talk. Let's take a break here right now because I want to bring Jeremy Kent on in just a moment. John Gersma, who is president of Brand Asset Consulting, a Young and Rubicam brands company, is an internationally known social theorist on consumerism and its impact on business, innovation, and strategy. As a consultant to corporate leaders and many of the world's best-known companies, he is a pioneer in the use of data to identify social change and to help companies both anticipate and adapt to new consumer interests and demands. He oversees Brand Asset Valuator, the world's largest database of consumer insights. He is also author of a brand new book, which we're going to talk about today. It's called Spend Shift, How the Post-Crisis Values Revolution is Changing the Way We Buy, the Way We Sell, and the Way We Live. That's a Wiley book, by the way. We're going to talk to John here in just a moment. Right now, it's Jeremy on The Advertising Show.
Hello, and from a chilly London in November, it's a very warm welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. This week, Virgin Atlantic turns to the Germans, British Airways goes head-to-head with the budget flyers, and Marks & Spencer plots a return to Europe. Last month, Virgin Atlantic launched a $9 million global ad campaign set to Feeling Good by Muse. Now the airline has hired Deutsche Bank to analyse the aviation market and Virgin's position within it. Press speculation suggests that the review could lead to a change in ownership for Richard Branson's 51% stake. The remaining 49% is currently held by Singapore Airlines. This review comes shortly after British Airways and American Airlines finally received clearance to cooperate on transatlantic flights, a move which Richard Branson and Virgin have vehemently opposed for years. At present, a Virgin Atlantic spokesman denies that there's any more to the report than a standard business operating procedure. But we look forward to seeing what happens over the next few months. Staying with the airlines, British Airways has turned its guns on EasyJet and Ryanair, two very aggressive budget airlines that operate out of the UK and Ireland. The new BA campaign created by BBH highlights the hidden extras behind the low-cost headline fares of the other two airlines. Using a $75 one-way fare to a number of European destinations and an online comparison tool, BA shows how those budget fares from its competition soon rise when additional charges for baggage, checking in, food and even pushchairs are added to the total bill. The campaign launched on 8 November and spans print, press, outdoor and digital. Finally, rumours are circulating that Marks & Spencer, the iconic British retailer, is planning a return to Europe. Marks & Spencer was founded by Michael Marks in 1884 and grew to become a household name. During the years of the Thatcher premiership, M&S became an icon of the era, but the brand lost touch with its public during the late 90s and withdrew from continental Europe 10 years ago. Continental fans of the brand were dismayed and even signed a book of condolence for its flagship store in Paris. Over the last 5 to 8 years, Marks & Spencer has worked hard to reconnect with its public and has benefited from some inspirational advertising. The retailer has now re-established its reputation, and this year's Christmas commercial is another spectacular success. This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Now you are up to date as it relates to that place across the pond. Jeremy Kent here at The Advertising Show. With Ray Shellens and Brad Forsyth, we told you a little bit about John Gersma and the new book, Spendshift, how the post-crisis values revolution is changing the way we buy, sell, and live. Chris Brogan, who is a New York Times bestselling author, says the book shift into the learning mode. This book will help you achieve escape velocity. So we have our seatbelts fastened and our tray tables in the upright position or something like that. Hey, John, and John's been on the show before. So, John, welcome back to The Advertising Show.
Ray and Brad, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was The Brand Bubble, a book you last wrote and had great things to say about the book. And you were a wonderful interview, so Ray and I decided to have you back. That book went off the charts, so I'm curious, John, what inspired you to write this new book, Spendshift?
Well, you know, I was given a speech at a TEDx event in Kansas City and was just starting to talk about how consumers had changed their lives after the Great Recession and how they were responding to the crisis. And I had some folks come up to me afterwards and say, you know, wow, we really felt like what you're saying is those things have happened in my life, and is that really a big pattern around the country? So I kind of dug deeper into the data, and Michael D'Antonio and I, my writing partner, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer in his own regard, the two of us basically went out and did a road trip, to the Great American Road Trip, and we went to 8 red states and blue states and went into dozens of communities and just tried to take our data that we had on what was happening with spending patterns and really understand how people's lives had been affected by the Great Recession. And we got a book out of it.
Sweet.
Well, hopefully before you get out of here, we'll all have a better understanding of the shift in attitudes towards buying and how business marketing has changed to adapt to this consumer change, which is certainly well illustrated in your book. I highly recommend it. And if we have an author on the author on the show, we by way of default recommend the book. But to have an author back twice, well, that means something, at least from our standpoint. You know, at YNR, you're directly responsible for overseeing the ongoing study called the Brand Asset Valuator. A large part of which your book is based on. For those that may not be familiar, John, with the project, describe the Brand Asset Valuator and a little bit about what that's all about.
Sure. I mean, basically, Brand Asset Valuator, or BAV, is the largest continuous database of brands in the world, and we've invested over $130 million in the study, collecting data on over 40,000 brands around the world in like 51 countries, I believe. And what we're able to do, though, is not only understand sort of brand perceptions that that the buying public has of various companies and brands. We also track, you know, entertainers, celebrities, media properties. But it also gives us a really good window into sort of the insights of the population, particularly in America, where we track 16,000 consumers, and we use it a lot to try to understand attitudes and values and behavior shifts that may be existing, sort of not unlike a Pew Center report. And what we did is we basically went out and I started looking at noticing these spending patterns that were shifting as a result of people's values and attitudes shifting during the crisis. And what we saw was this spend shift, this group of Americans, nearly 55% of the population, who were basically looking at their wallets and their pocketbooks in an entirely new light. Not only were they trying to be more thrifty, but they were actually forcing businesses and brands to be more akin to understanding their values. So this values-led consumerism, things like thrift, self-reliance, community, faith, hard work, sort of stewardship. These were the important themes that kind of came out of what the spend shift was looking for, and they were actually forcing businesses to sort of align with them and cater to them in new ways.
You know, in your book, you say that we're all moving from a mindless consumer to a more mindful consumer. I'm curious, what impact are you seeing that this may have long-term for the future of consumerism in the U.S.?
Well, if you look, go back and look, Brad, at the fact that the 71% of sort of our America's GDP is driven today by consumerism, and yet you kind of stack that up against the real hard economic facts of the crisis. You know, $4 trillion of wealth was evaporated at housing values at the same time that we were drawing out 10% of our income out of our houses in the average American household. You know, we're using our house as an ATM. Well, that's all gone away. We have sort of $3 trillion of consumer credit that's been cut off, so you can't use your credit cards the way we did before. And, you know, there's this sort of continuing deleveraging of consumer debt, nearly $1.3 trillion this year, as people are trying to pay off their debts and save more and spend less. It has a huge impact. And what I'm here to say is it's not about this endless frugality and sort of a really bad period for American business and our economy. I actually think the opposite. I think that I was inspired by the fact that there's actually these new routes to capitalism and new ideas that are out there that are sort of a result of the crisis and a result of where the spend shift is trying to take us.
You know, a lot of what we hear today is all based on, well, we're hearing that there's consumer change going on and that this is all based on the result of the economic downturn. But yet you say that early on, this was happening even before the economic downturn, that consumers were turning towards a more value-based spending. And if that was happening before the downturn, John, what do you think the relationship or the cause was for that?
Well, I think you have to look at the macro factors that have been building for over, you know, nearly a decade. You had clearly the concern for the environment, the disillusion of Main Street, the fact that sort of Wall Street was getting the bailout and not Main Street, the sort of continuing divide in economic classes, and this continued run-up in debt, both not only sort of public debt, but really sort of private debt, the household, average American household. And all those sort of became factors that, you know, in my opinion, the recession basically sort of created this catalytic event. And so what happened during the crisis was people went immediately to frugality. They just, you know, stopped spending altogether. But as they started to kind of come back into the marketplace, they started to realize that some of the behaviors that they had adapted to during the recession weren't necessarily not all that bad. You know, not going out five nights a week and being a bit more sort of discerning with the way that we spent our money. So what we're seeing happening is this shift from sort of a credit to a debit-based society that has been occurring sort of gradually over the last decade. And, you know, my personal soapbox is it's not a new normal. It's actually an old normal. These values that we're returning to are really sort of values that are sort of endemic to sort of American culture. And if you go back and look at historical savings rates in our country, we always save 10% of our income right up until about 1985, where then it took us only, you know, literally 30 years to get to a negative savings rate in our country. So what we're returning to, in my opinion, is sort of something that's quite familiar, and yet at the same time we're using all these new technologies to sort of find our way forward.
I like that, the good old days. Spend Shift is the name of the book. John is the co-author of the book, John Gersma and Michael D'Antonio. How the Post-Crisis Values Revolution is Changing the Way We Buy, Sell, and Live. And it's kind of a fresh change, if you ask me, a lot more honest way to move through this life of ours here. The Advertising Show is being powered by Shipple.com and a platform called Tendency. Obviously, if you want your website out there, it ought to be working for you. And that's what Shipple does, so check it out. It's Schipul.com with Ray and Brad at the Advertising Show and our special guest, John Gersma. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Never borrow money needlessly, just when you must.
Welcome back. Glad you're here at The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. And our special guest is the author of a new book called Spend Shift, How the Post Crisis Values Revolution is changing the way we buy, sell, and live. John Gersma is our guest, and he's been a guest on the show before. You know what I really like about this book as well, John, is the way it takes you through, as you said, you did a road show. We have, from Kansas City to Detroit to, Dallas, Texas, and you're pulling ideals and ideas and opportunities for people to kind of, as you say, it retool and shift their way of thinking and spending and acting. I think that's pretty cool. And I was curious about Detroit because I tell you, one of the things you list here is optimism. Boy, oh boy, Detroit needs that badly. Indestructible spirit, the values of optimism, resiliency, and opportunity. So you saw that in Detroit, and I think that's an absolutely wonderful thing because it'd be real easy not to see that, John.
I was, guys, just completely amazed, and it got me so excited. It was one of the first markets we went to when we were, starting the research on the book. And the morning that we began our research, we encountered a German film crew that was packing up to head back to Berlin. And we were in the hotel with them, and these guys were just glee. They had glee that they had caught this portrait of American decline. You know, they were telling us all these unbelievable pictures that were like Mad Max-like of all these decayed buildings and this decrepit, declined American city. And they were just, had all this excitement. And so we just were kind of walked into it with a little bit of trepidation. But, I think those guys walked around and they filmed a couple of burned out buildings. You know, what we did is we got in and we really understood what was happening sort of at a deeper layer. And if you go into Detroit, where the average price of a house is $14,000,
wow.
You know, they sold the Silverdome for $543,000, not even the price of a Manhattan one-bedroom apartment. But the point about that is that there's all this sort of speculation is all stripped out of Detroit, and what there is are just assets and opportunity. And we met amazing entrepreneurs. You know, we met Toria Blanchard, who had started a new restaurant, and she got a loan from a woman named Sue Mosley, who basically acts as a small business entrepreneur. And the joke downtown is that she's known as the de facto mayor. And there's this whole interesting argument that the fact that there's a lack of sort of government infrastructure and municipal services has actually been a boon to these entrepreneurs because they found ways to navigate around the nincompoop forest. And, Toria was amazing inspiration, and we met a whole bunch of people from urban farmers like Patrick Crouch. You know, there's 50 urban farms now already in Detroit.
Wow.
And what these guys were doing was creating this sort of virtuous circle where they would only hire people to work in their restaurants and their small businesses that lived in inner city Detroit. They were sourcing their food from the urban farmers, and they were even generating some of their electricity from a really interesting company called Nextech that's bringing back Thomas Edison's famous old direct current electricity format. So everything was off the grid, very local, very much about optimism and excitement. And for us, we were really blown away.
Stopped, not to mention too much on Detroit and spend too much time there, but the Pontiac Silverdome, what an incredible buy. I mean, $500,000 for this huge inflatable venue, and the guy that bought it is making money hand over foot there. He's got all different kinds of events going on there, and you would wonder, what in God's name are you going to do with an inflatable building? And he has done that. So Detroit, way to go, and glad to see you're coming back, John. Huh?
Don't short the Motor City is my line.
You got it.
You know, staying with some of these great data points that you were able to glean from your travels across America, when people were asked, according to your book, how they felt about the competitive marketplace, you say that 49% of those surveyed said that there is a greater opportunity for individual business owners to compete with large companies today than there used to be. I'm curious, is that just really more of a situation where people are finding themselves no longer working for large companies and getting an entrepreneurial spirit, or do they really feel that they can compete against larger companies as individuals today?
Well, you know what happened was during the crisis, where people were laid off from their jobs, and this is a story Rob Kalin recounted to us. He is the CEO of Etsy. Etsy is this, $400 million valued company or so that basically creates handcrafted goods on the internet. It's like an eBay for handcrafted goods. And this small Brooklyn startup that didn't exist more than 3 years ago, has now become this haven for all of these newly minted small business owners that turned to sort of Etsy to be able to sell their crafts. And it started with a bunch of people, you know, needing to make ends meet. And suddenly you found people that rediscovered new careers and became entrepreneurs. So Etsy's a great example of these networks now that basically sort of mint and help sort of, you know, empower the what we call the Army of Davids, these small entrepreneurs, to have very powerful voices in the marketplace. So it's the social media, the new technologies that are creating this excitement, and then again, back to Detroit, it's that sense of optimism that there are sort of new ways to compete that there weren't before.
Very interesting point. You know, you really caught my attention with this concept that you mentioned in your book called Triple Bottom Line. I want to talk a little bit about that, but first, why don't you define for us what triple bottom line measurement is, John?
Right. It's a concept that, you know, people have sort of brought before me, which is, you know, sort of people, planet, profits are sort of the idea. My kind of handle on it is a hat trick business model where everybody wins. But what was interesting is we interviewed a number of startups, you know, and over 50 for the book. I kept seeing these themes all across the country that the business models were being built on that principle, which was the belief that, you know, we know that trust in institutions have declined by nearly 50%, and the fact that people want sort of green and green. They want to do things that are right, but they want to be compensated for it. So a lot of the business models we saw were all about recognizing that insight and making sure that sort of everybody wins in the equation. So, you know, we interviewed an interesting guy up in Waltham, up in Everett, Massachusetts. His name is John Norton. And he took over the city recycling job because he was pestering the local guys about the dismal recycling rates in Everett. So he took it as a part-time job, and he had a huge business problem. Only 5% of people recycled. Well, he turned to Rob Gonin, who is a Brooklyn-based startup again, called Recycle Bank. And what Recycle Bank does is they give you incentives for recycling. So the little electronic chip, an RFID chip, is on each recycling bin. It weighs your contents, and it kicks that information into your online account. So you basically earn frequent flyer miles for recycling. And you can turn those in for coupons and for other incentives from manufacturers that want to get access to this very valuable customer. And, you know, Recycle Bank is growing leaps and bounds, and they've just announced that they're going into the UK and starting their first global distribution. Yeah. So interesting ideas. A lot of those themes we saw during the book were about realizing that everybody has to win in order for us to have a successful business.
Makes a lot of sense. John Gersma, the author of the new book called Spend Shift, How the Post-Crisis Values Revolution is Changing the Way We Buy, Sell, and Live. We've got more conversation with John, and we will do that here in just a moment on The Advertising Show with Rachel and Brad Forsyth. Back with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. Spend Shift, how the post-crisis values revolution is changing the way we buy, sell, and live to the simpler times. There's a part in your book that talks about basically a belief that work and trade should be about something bigger than just making money. And there are a few companies in your book that are topped off as being the best at doing that. One of them we spoke before was Wendy's. But Oprah, media, and positive social values, Johnson & Johnson, healthcare and support for the nursing profession, Fisher-Price, toys and child development, and Wendy's hamburgers and child welfare. So really, talk about that. I think that's a really a cool aspect of what business and services should be about, John.
Well, one of the things that's happened as a result of social media and sort of marketing fragmentation is that we don't really separate company corporate behavior from what the brand is, what it stands for. And one of the many of the companies have started to become very comfortable in what I kind of call CSR 2.0, which is moving past, you know, sort of tactical programs or initiatives into really making your sort of corporate behavior a part of your brand and a part of sort of the way that you talk and communicate. And so, you know, those examples you just gave, Ray, were really all about sort of realizing that, that brands that have this sense of integrity and this sense of purpose actually outperform other brands in our study on usage and preference and loyalty, because people want to stand by those brands because they have brands, you know, they're brands with meaning, and they stand behind companies, again, that have values that, that the American, you know, customers are seeking. Interestingly enough, you know, we spent time with Microsoft, and they've got this really interesting program called Elevate America, which vows to retrain 2 million Americans with IT training. You know, perfect example of a company that has a capability that they can turn around and use for public good, and that's showing up in the numbers as well. You know, when we poll Main Street, Microsoft is a cooler brand than Apple. You know, greater degrees of trust, greater degrees of sense of loyalty, and greater sense of ethics. So I think that those things are very interesting, that companies shouldn't shy away from these, and it should embrace them as part of their programs.
You know, shifting gears for a moment, John, your research found that millennials want more than just a job these days, and a paycheck for that matter, that millennials also expect more from the brands they trust. So I'm curious, as this group becomes more important to marketers and they have more expendable income, what should companies be doing today to profit from this consumer segment who hold different values than the typical consumer today?
Well, millennials, interestingly enough, are almost, I think, Brad, the largest group in our study in terms of composition of the spend shift movement. I think they were like 55% of their population. And the next closest group were seniors, the greatest generation. And when we ripped that apart, we found that their values were remarkably similar. They were both, you know, both groups, despite sort of 30, 40 years between them, were very interested in integrity, respect, empathy, you know, sort of transparency, stewardship, all these sort of core American values we've been talking about that are very, very much in fashion. The difference with millennials is that they've got unbelievable capabilities to take these technologies and make them work. You know, so we found a really interesting millennial-driven concept down in Tampa called carrot mobs. You know, if a boycott is a stick, a carrot is an incentive. And these sort of cooperative consumerism groups, these carrot mobs, were banding together to basically reward local businesses that were doing the right thing. So that sort of scaled spending, you know, the same phenomenon we see with Groupon, and we interviewed Andrew Mason for the book as well, but this idea of scaling together and banding together to be a force is exactly what the spend shift is all about. So millennials are going to take those social tools and use them to, I believe, to force capitalism to be about better instead of more.
You know, something you talked about towards the end of our first segment during the interview, you mentioned how a lot of the things that you see going on, the shift in the today's consumer, was taking place long before the recession. What we have seen in the past, for example, the dot bomb, as we called it, back in the early 2000s, there was a market contraction, and then the consumer returned to old ways and returned to spending, as they have in past recessions. But so I'm curious, if a lot of this was in play before the recession, and as we come out of this recession, did the recession do more to change consumers' minds that were maybe sitting on the fence, or did it solidify a thought process that was already happening in the mindset of the consumer? And then more long-term, I sense that you're saying that these changes will be slow in returning, if at all.
Right. The move from mindless to mindful consumption is this byproduct of the forces that have been building over the last decade, as we discussed, plus all the benefits of these social media tools that we have now to be much more savvy in the consumer marketplace. So I really see it as a long-term trend. I think if you look at the economic data and you look at everything from housing values to sort of disposable income and how long it's going to take for the jobs to come back, I think the estimate now at this point is 9 years based on the jobs that were lost. You know, that, to me, you put those together, it becomes a very difficult combination to create an argument that we're going to go back to our old ways.
So as we get wrap up this segment and conclude today's interview, if you're a marketer, a brand manager, what should you be doing today in reaction to this spend shift in today's consumer for this long-term recovery that you're anticipating?
I believe that a couple things. One is it's critically important to offer your customers both value and values. They're looking for both of those things, and oftentimes that has been sort of a paradox. You know, I want organic food, but it's expensive, or I want fair trade, but, you know, I'm going to have to pay extra for it. I think if you can find ways to really understand and cater to your customer and make them feel good about their purchases and make them believe your values match is real and sincere, you've got tremendous opportunity, in my opinion, to think of the American marketplace as an emerging market for your business. I think the other key thing is to understand that we've got to shift and change our language from sort of consumer to customer. You know, the consumer is a very derogatory term. You know, it suggests a mindless gobbling beast of indifference that we're going to be able to just, you know, dump products on and they're going to just ingest them. And that's not the case. They're marketing savvy, they're socially connected, and they've got a more mindful eye with the way that they're going to work. They're going to restrain their demand. And so, you know, we really work for them. And that becomes, I think, critical. And I guess maybe the last thing I think is pretty interesting is just to kind of really understand that this is a fundamental shift, that we're moving from a, as I said, a credit to a debit society. So you've got to find ways to help your customers feel nimble, feel adaptable, not be locked into purchases per se, finding ways to sort of create long-term value with them, realizing that they're living in that sort of lifestyle. And that's a good thing ultimately for very strong brands and companies, because what we're doing now is in a debit society is the money that we're spending is ours and not the banks, and therefore we're going to take a much more careful look at these brands that we cater to, and those brands, I believe, are going to engender greater loyalty and usage over the long run.
John, this is an incredibly good time to have this information in the book out. I understand there is a lot of response to the book as well. You're already doing bestseller stuff, right?
Yeah, we're excited to get onto the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. I think we got in on number 2. Last week, and then we also are on the Inc.'s CEO Reads top book of November.
Well, with all due respect, this is a fantastic book. Go out and buy it, whether you're a consumer or a retailer or whatever. It's all about doing it a little bit better and basically changing the way you take a look at how you talk to your customers and such. So, John, thanks again for the book. You're a great guy. We're happy to have you here back at the Advertising Show, and we hope you sell lots of these books.
Ray and Brad, thank you so much.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth, back with more right after this. It's the Advertising Show with Ray Schillen and Brad Forsyth. Thanks again to John and his book, Spend Shift. Go get that book. You know, it perfectly in time for the holidays here. Somebody will benefit from that. I like a man who says nice things about Detroit as well, and he does that in the book, as well as Cleveland, and that's very nice as well. So we've got, we're here at the 21st of November with this particular show, which means that prior to Black Friday, you may have done your holiday spending here. Basically, Bloomingdale's, JCPenney sharing their plans to woo customers for the holiday season. Bloomingdale's has a catalog customer to their customers, which reveals the retailer theme for 2010. Happy, Merry, Peace, Love, Hope is their thing. And Penny has started running a campaign in the New York area that promotes its store in Manhattan, which opened in 2009. The upbeat theme for Bloomingdale's, part of Macy's Inc., reflects how executives at the chain feel more optimism is out there, according to Frank Berman, who was a senior VP for marketing. Certainly it isn't the same as it was back in the old days, 2007, before the financial crisis, he added, but we're in a better place than the last couple of holiday seasons, and I'm glad, Frank, that you believe that. Although what we've just heard with respect to John, we are still conservative people, and we may not be spending as wildly as we did. I guess with that said, have you done any holiday shopping thus far?
Not yet. I do it earlier than the way I used to, but I don't, you know, I'm not one to do it way out. I like to have at least a little Christmas music going when I'm in the store, you know?
Well, that's not too tough. But yeah,
well,
exactly
these days,
right.
That's true.
Exactly, yeah.
That's true. Right after, I think, Labor Day is when they start that this year, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. And by the 25th, it's like, I can't take anymore. And then we, of course, cruise into January.
I used to I used to do that. I used to get out there just because I like to see the hustle bustle of the Christmas Eve shopping. And and I haven't done that in many, many years. The last time I did that, I was like, this is crazy. Why am I doing this?
Well, it wouldn't be hustle bustle. It would be a hula and bula for you. Something like that. Anyway, what do you have there, Brad? We're just about to close out.
Well, one quick thought here. Disney CEO Bob Iger, I think it's Iger, is cutting the ribbon on the company's new flagship store in Times Square. The 22,000-square-foot storefront aims to take Disney's retail store in a new high-tech direction with mobile checkouts and a 65-foot-high animated billboard. So if you want to see Disney's new high-tech flagship store in New York City, check it out.
And who else but Disney could do something like that, right? I mean, come on, look at that. What a great company here. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Go out and get John's book if you are so inclined to do so, and we hope you are. And we also invite you back here as we roll into the Christmas season, the holiday season. We hope you'll stay with us. We've got a lot of great things coming up. We've got Alex Ben Block joining us here in a couple of weeks as he looks back at the entertainment industry for 2010. And what to expect in 2011 as well, and a lot of great guests, too. And, of course, all of this stuff is right at theadvertisingshow.com. We make it so convenient. It's incredible. The Advertising Show. Tell a friend. It's being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. We will talk to you next week.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.